You grooving already. We gonna make y'all dance on this one. Introducing my man, B. Howard.
I don't need a reason to groove all night. Long as I got you, babe, by my side.
Good afternoon. This is Andell Banks, your host of Wish Upon a Star. First of all, I want to say we hope your new year has started with good health and thoughts of inspiring positive adventures ahead. I am certainly thankful for another year of being your host of Wish Upon a Star. I appreciate and respect the professionalism of our coordinator, Mrs. Denise Banks, and our engineers, those wonderful twins, Don and Doug, who make us sound so great, for letting me continue this show. There's just not enough to say also about our many guests that have appeared on the show. The response has been great. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And may you continue to listen to this wonderful show. Wish Upon a Star is in entertaining you at the start of the new year with thoughts of poetry, prose, and pride. Just to let you know, Wish Upon a Star is a dynamic radio program spotlighting talent in the arts arena. We have guest discussions of the challenges and advice in making it in the visual, musical, literary, painting, and performing arts. As a unique part of the show, we will interview professional guests, experts in the fields of entertainment law, copywriting, studio recording, publishing, promoters, and other topics in these creative and competitive fields. If you or know of someone in the arts that would be interested in being on the show, please contact us via email, andyband2@gmail.com. As speaking to poetry, prose, and pride is through language. Language is more than just communication between people. In a way, it is a permanent record of experiences and people of different cultures, which often react differently to the same experience. The great translator is often as creative as the original author, because they are not just translating words, but the meaning of those words. And who can emulate this translation better than the griot? Griots are worldly cultures. They are storytellers, and they have been the supreme voice of these traditional stories. Today, ladies and gentlemen, our honored guest, Sister Inora McQueen, is a member of that outstanding griot organization and cultural for many years. This is her biography. Sister Lenore McQueen, also affectionately and professionally known as Sister Inora. Sister Inora has dedicated 27 years of her life in the performing arts arena. Her dedication and love for the arts has inspired her to educate the public about cultural awareness, mainly the African cultural awareness, about its rich history, legacy, and lifestyles. Sister Inora does this by combining poetry, songs, and music variations. Many of her performances feature African-American women who have contributed to our African history. She highlights such women as Harriet Tubman, Biddy Mason, Mary Fields, known as historically Stagecoach Mary, and Rosa Parks are all in her performances. Sister Inora's business name is Dem Roots Inc. and has been in operation since 1985. I greatly introduce and welcome to the show, Sister Honora.
Yes, greetings. Happy New Year, and may this year be wonderful and very prosperous for you. I appreciate you.
And so do we. I will not begin by telling our audience at what point in your life this all started. You tell us, when did you get the interest of storytelling, and when was this instilled in you?
Well, I was 17 years old when I met the cultural community here in Baltimore. And before then, my life wasn't too cultural, I'll put it that way. And I had experience in my life that caused me to be away from my family. And I have a brother who came to visit me, which it was Baltimore City Jail for Women. And it was the last weekend I was going to be there. And he came in because he's a very famous artist here in Baltimore. And he said, I don't like how your life is going, Lenore. You need culture in your life. I want to introduce you to this brother named Charlie Duggar. He's a school teacher. And you need to do better things in your life, and I want him to meet Mommy, Daddy, and you all together, because I was his high school dropout. Well, when I met Charlie Duggar, my mother's father, good things started happening. I was involved in being around people who were African dancers, drummers, celebrated Black History Month, and as well as Aldrua Park. We have a group called the Park Loud Drummers, which I had been very much involved with because that's how I learned how to play drums, through the Park Loud Drummers. So when the culture came in my life, I got to know people as Harriet Tubman, of course, and Harriet Tubman really had stuck with me, and it was in my spirit because my grandmother from Alabama had told me about uncle, a great uncle of hers who had gotten lynched by the Ku Klux Klan, said that they were gambling and the Ku Klux Klan came and he ran and chased them, and he was one that was found hanging from a tree. And so knowing that and being introduced to Harriet Tubman and knowing that we were considered slaves, but even before that, through being introduced to culture, I was introduced to saying that we are African people. We are from Africa, and we were brought here to America. So Harriet Tubman has been, Harriet Tubman has been one who has really been in my spirit because I just felt myself being very much interested in who she was. And when I went to the library, I would, research and see pictures of her, because that was the first thing I seen, pictures of her. And alongside seeing her, it was Marcus Garvey, then Mark Vesey, Nat Turner. I was introduced to them. And then the other ones who were during the civil rights, Rosa Parks and Fannie Lou Hamer, all of these had been in my path in the time that I was getting out of the bad way of living into the positive and the more righteous way of living as an African people.
That's a very compelling story, and as I listened to you, I hope everybody got out of it what I did, that the struggle never ends. It just never ends. And at that time, you really needed that, and I bless you and thank you for having the wherewithal to just stick with it, because that's what you need to do. You can't come out of anything unless you want to do it yourself, and you did that.
Oh, yes.
I also am very familiar with Mr. Charles Duggar as well. I might also get him to be on the show, because I've been knowing him for many years, and he is a positive person.
Yes.
I know when you perform, I know what it must do to you, because I've seen the Griot conferences and some of their performances. What was the first performance in your impressive journey as a storyteller and performer?
Well, my first one, excuse me, I'm caught a little cold. My first one was when I was involved in a community where there were Black Panthers, there were Islam, Muslim people, Sunni Muslim, Nation of Islam, the Noble Drew Ali, the Moorish American Muslims. I was in that kind of environment. So they had various types of affairs, and I was a part of that. And basically, I was learning, and I was looking, I was seeing. And also, I was a teenage mother. My daughter at the time, I got involved with culture. She was 3.5 years old.
Mm.
And right now, I'm 62, and she's 40. She'll be 48 next month. And she was also with me at times because there was an organization called the Timbuktu Center. And it was a very, very cultural African-oriented organization that was on Emerson Avenue. And during the time that I have to say that Brother Tali Douglas saved my life, because by me choosing the kind of life that I had, I was put out of Douglas. I was going to Douglas High. And in order for me to get back in school, I had to go to night school and summer school to get into the regular school. So being in Douglas didn't want me back because I was a teenage mother. And I would have to prove myself, so I had to prove myself by going to night school, which was Douglas. I could get there, I could go there, and Calvert Adult Center that was on North Avenue, up where the Board of Education is at. And I proved to be a good student, and the next thing I know, Brother Tally said that the Board of Education said that I would be able to attend Forest Park. And at that time, Brother Tally Duggar, you know, like my brother said, I want you to meet this black brother named Charlie Duggar. He had started the black student government there at Forest Park. I've never known no schools that have it. You hear about it being in different colleges and universities. So I wound up being a part of that. I was the vice president. There was another sister there named Teresa Boyd, and her and I were very good friends. So we had started the Gaylay Rap and I Head. We had like an after school program. And we had the skits. We put skits together. Some of the skits through the brains of Brother Charlie Duggar came about. And after I graduated from Forest Park in 1972, I was more freer to be able to be at all of the other affairs that was in Washington, D.C. There's a brother named Kofi Ties. He's an artist, but he also has greeting cards. And he was the first one that I had ever known to have put out Kwanzaa greeting cards along with the Mother's Day, Father's Day, but they were all Afrocentric.
Mm-hmm.
So actually that was, you know, my beginning and how I, you know, was into the journey of being an African born here. And talking about poetry, when I started writing poems, my first poem was Higher Your Arm, Ball in Your Hand. This is the symbol for the new African. And whenever I was
repeat
saying,
that again.
Higher Your Arm. In other words, raise up your arm, ball up your hand. This is the symbol for the new African. And the way I spell African was with a K instead of the C, A-N-K-A-N. And other poems that I had written, it was poems about, excuse me, it was poems about Miss Clairol, you know, the commercials that we want to hear about Miss Clairol and, you know, dyeing the hair and those type of things. Well, I wore a bush from that time, and when I wore the bush, I wore it proudly, and all of the other brothers and sisters that were around wore dasikis, and we played drums, we sing, and we learned African songs. And then there was the thing of pouring libations for the people in our community who we knew who were not just a part of what our cultural activities and being a part of the group called The People. That is what Charlie Douglas named us, The People. And what we did, we went into libraries, we went into schools, we went into rec centers, and we did our thing. And it was a whole program centered around African Americans or African people who have a history and have to be proud of ourselves instead of being sad about us not doing things and being here, being there. But our race is very royal.
Right. Let's get loose.
District.
Yeah.
That.
What up, y'all? Just came to your city to say what's up.
What up?
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Show me love.
Hey.
Hop off the plane to a new show.
What up?
And all the shorties, they be waiting on me. Thugs packing they pistols. But ain't nobody aiming on me.
Not me.
Got a pocket full of fresh dough.
Dough, baby.
So you know I gotta bake it, homie.
Bake it for me.
And I'm thankful. Get whatever you want.
All right, Sister Idora, again, that is so interesting. That's how you started, and like I said before, I can understand how you feel when you're doing things like that coming from your past. You're also well associated with the National Association of Black Storytellers. Can you tell us a little bit about them and how their mission is incorporated in the Griot storytelling?
Well, actually, I'm not a member of them, but I have friends who are. Specifically, this one young lady named we call her Grandma Edna, and she has been a part of the Griot Circle. And in fact, at the Arena Players, when I saw you, and
yes.
That was the day that she had gave a tribute to Mary Carter Smith, who started the Griot Circle. I never was a part of the Griot Circle, but I've always admire what they did, because for the things that have happened in my life, was I had cared for my mother, who had Alzheimer's, and she had it up until 13 years. She died the 14th year. But I did everything that I could to help her get the programs, even the monies that was for family support. And I had even taken my mom into various institutions, because I used to go into the schools, and I was on a list that was through the Baltimore City Arts and Public Schools, and it was under my business called Demo Roots. That's how you pronounce it, Demo Roots. In other words, it's your roots, my roots, is Demo Roots, and it was most so focused on storytelling. There were some stories that I had learned along the way. And it was audience participation. I always brought my instruments. I brought my drums. I let the children play with the drums, taught them the songs like J.J. Kool-Aid. And it had become something that I knew it was meant to be, because for whatever years that I would, you know, had gotten married and that didn't work out. And it's like after that, and I started working. I was working in the libraries. I went to college. In fact, I went to Bay College, which is no longer in existence. And I, from Bay College, went to Community College of Baltimore. But the things that I had majored in played a part in my interest of photography, because I have what they say, buku amount of pictures of the cultural community, the history, from the Marcus Garvey festivals. We had the Marcus Garvey parade. We had African Liberation Day festival. We had the Mother's Day affair that was at a place in West Baltimore, Curry Street, and it was at a playground area, and it was we named it the Wall of Respect, because it had all of these different heads of our African heroes and sheroes. And we would perform right there. We had reggae bands. We had African dancers, drummers. We had, you know, other ports, jazz musicians come. And it's like even from last year, I was there. And this time we had a brand new reggae band who started, and they're going strong in Baltimore. So it's like we are all coming together. The players of instruments are coming together. All of the ports are coming together. And we're coming together because we have many stories to tell. And that is what I know that one of my aims is we got to teach. We got to reach and we got to teach. We got to
that
teach.
Good. That almost goes into my next question that I wanted to ask you, and it might be just a continuation. That is, you had collaboration in many projects with many people. and mm-hmm. some of these projects, what factors were discovered in these projects by you and by other people?
Repeat that again.
I said, in the projects that you've been involved in, just like the one uh-huh. we just mentioned, mm-hmm. what did you get out of it, and what did some of the people get out of it? What was their response?
We got pride.
Yes.
Pride.
And with the young children, I understand you say children. When you have that children involvement, let me hear about that.
Yes. In fact, I'm from West Baltimore and around Pennsylvania Avenue, the little street called Oxford Street, the street where your mother and my mother, you know, and therefore our fathers, and we were all their children. And mm-hmm. we played soccer and ball on the street. We would have relays on that long street, and that street was the longest street in that area, from Pennsylvania Avenue all the way up to Juvenile Avenue. And being raised in, around Pennsylvania Avenue, of course, the Royal Theater, I went to the Royal Theater. I seen all of the people, James Brown. I seen the Marvelous, Supremes, Temptations, Four Tops. I seen them. And as I've gotten older to realize, you know, they started making movies about them, you know, the Four Hearts, the Heartbeats, and, you know, you can identify with that movie called Stalker. I've seen those movies right in the Royal Theater. But as far as McCullough Homes, that was one of the first black projects that they built in Baltimore. And I tell you, it was I have a lot of fond, very fond memories of McCullough Homes and the people who were there, because, like I said, just like Oxford Street, your mother, your father was our mother and father, and we were all their children. So just knowing that there was a place that you can say you were from, and that the people there, they love you. We didn't have, like, what's going on right now? Oh, my gosh, you can really, really appreciate back then when you were raised up. You can smell the food from the people, doors, especially in the projects. You always smell their fried chicken, and you knew who was cooking it, and that fish, the fried fish. But the restaurants on Pennsylvania Avenue, they were all black people owning them. And, you know, they had the Chinese. They didn't have white people cooking food there. So I have a lot of pride in my growing up. The street that I grew up on Oxford Street. That street, we had lampposts. And across the street, we lived across the street, 551 Oxford Street. And my brother and some of the other brothers would be shooting crap during the daylight. And at night, they would gather at the same lamppost and start singing those songs. What's your name? Is it Mary or Sue?
Right.
Gotta get a dog, you know? So I remember these things, and I had written a poem about that as well, and I had that in there because there was this lady named Miss Louise always looking out her window. And I was running up the street to go to the store, and she said, Lenore, fasten up your coat. I'm going to tell your mother, what you trying to do, catch cold? So, you know, we would say, oh, she's so nosy. But you know what? Sometimes it's good to be nosy. It's a blessing to be nosy.
Oh, absolutely. I came up during that same era, so I can identify with just about everything that you said.
Okay.
Also, at that time, we did not even close lock our doors. I came up when you could leave your doors open. And it gave profoundness to the statement that it takes a village to raise a child, because, like you said, if you did anything coming home from school or in the neighborhood, you wouldn't be afraid of your parents so much as you would from the neighbors telling your parents what you had done, or even the school factor. You know, you were never late for school. You couldn't do anything in school, which was, again, like you said, it brought us up to be the kind of people that we really are. What I'm going to do now, so that you can get a little drink of water, and me too, we're going to take a 15-second break, and we'll be right back.
Okay, great.
Hey, boy, I remember when we first met.
Welcome back. This is Andale Banks, your host of Wish Upon a Star, saying thank you so much for listening. We are broadcasting on www.bbsradio.com, station 2. You can hear all of our previous broadcasts on the website, and also we are now on iTunes, Facebook, Craigslist, and of course on your mobile phone, 716-748-0144. Again, thank you so much, and we broadcast every other Wednesday on www.bbsradio.com, station 2. Today, recognizing the most important thing about language, poetry, prose, and pride, we have Sister Inora, a griot from Baltimore, Maryland. Now that we have got some of your background, Sister Inora, welcome back.
Thank you. Welcome. You're welcome.
All right, next, I'll get into now maybe some more questions, but first I want to hear something that I have heard that you have done before. It's called Steal Away, We Ain't Got Long to Stay Here. Yeah. So not only being a storyteller, a performer, consultant, but you also introduce new projects and writings which uplift the folklore and traditions of our African-American heritage. How did this particular poem come about, Steal Away, We Ain't Got Long to Stay Here?
Okay, well, the poem came about, and this is my original, and this book is that I'm holding in my hand is the Great Blacks and Wax Museum, Inside the Doors, an Anthology, and myself, along with several other poets, poetry was published, and this is through the Blacks and Wax, the Great Blacks and Wax Museum. And my poem that I had written, and it came on time because, excuse me, the Harriet Tubman Journal with this brother who I had been in communication with named Jimmy McGowan, and he worked at a business that was called the Harriet Tubman Journal. And I had corresponded with him because I had heard about him when, back in the days, I used to go to the Eastern Shore. I became a member of the Harriet Tubman Organization, Association, and I had was asked to come and provide a show for Harriet Tubman Day. And I did it twice. I did it in 1995. And I did it in 1997, and I've taken some people from Baltimore who were performers, such as Mama Olu from Aleo. She came down, and she had some of her members, and they perform African dance. And also the Tiny Tunes, because during that time, there was a group called the Tiny Tunes who had appeared on the Apollo, New York Apollo, and they won three times in a row, and I was very close friends with their mother. In fact, in Baltimore, I had did a block party after starting an organization and starting a youth program called, the youth program was called Demaroots Youth Portalist Youth Cultural Project. And the organization I had started was called Queensbury Garrison Association because I lived on Queensbury Avenue. And it's like one of them long side streets. It was like three blocks. And the children, you know, there was a lot of children there. And being that I was already involved with the performing arts, I kind of saw some of them like fighting each other. And even sometimes, you know, like trying to pick on my children. So I had got to know their parents because we would go to the same supermarket and I would see their children. And, you know, it was a thing that I asked them some of the parents, because sometimes we would be, you know, right there, you know, playing Keno when Keno first come out, when people was winning the money. And I would run into them because, you know, we paid bills in the same place and you know, got money orders and all. But being that I was kind of barbered by, you know, my two children, my son and my daughter, being there and not really knowing anybody, I had family in Park Heights, but they were farther away. So I had fell asleep and woke up on my mind that enhance these children's talents, because the same shows that I'm on enhance their talents, and they can be on the same shows that I've been on with Charlie Duggar and doing the libraries and things of that nature. So I put the program together. I found out about how to with the association organization in Park Heights. And during the course of the time, there was a playground that I wasn't even aware of until maybe about 4 months after that, because it was an alley that the playground was behind the houses that were across from me in the 1500 block of Queensbury Avenue. And it used to be a rec center. They used to have a pool. They used to have equipment. And it had been down for about 20 years. And the children was like playing in the streets. And then, of course, you know, it was like drug exchanges and, you know, just a bunch of craziness going on. But at the same time, when I woke up with the fact to enhance these children's talents, I did it. The house that I lived in was big enough. And the basement, I utilized the basement, I utilized the backyard. And the children had learned how to learn the African dance, which, of course, was Funga. And then we put our own little dance steps together. And then it was the hip-hop. It was during the time the Fuji song came out, Killing Me Softly. And we sang songs, cover songs, Mary J. Blige. And, you know, it was like everything was in good taste. So when I had the block party for the first time, the block party was to have a block party through the organization I had, because the parents that lived in the block around the corner from me and down the street, they became members of the Queensbury Garrison Association. So I went to the meetings, and we had our meetings for the community. We had them down at the library, which now is a Head Start program. But the library, Pimlico Library, we utilized it a lot. And when the playground, when I saw the playground and I saw it, and I got to talking to people who was telling me about it, and they said, "You didn't know it was a playground?" And I said, "No, I didn't know." But there was drug transactions there. But the people, the children that I had, that was their parents, that was there. The parents respected my request that helped us to have the playground we built. And that happened. It happened through a program that the Parks and Recs, where they, you know, build the playgrounds with the equipment. I managed to get a professional size basketball court, brand new swings and you know, just the whole playground. Everything was it was blessed, because I had vendors that were there. I had gotten support from Pimlico Racetrack. Being at Park Heights, you know, we have like a strong West Indian community, and they have their businesses, and they supported me, even the record store.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody is like, you know, I see more so why, because just getting off the subject, my name, Lenora, I was the only one in 122 school, Sammy Covis Taylor. Nobody else's name was Lenora. And I started like not liking my name. And as I got involved with the culture community, there was this brother named Atiba, God bless him, he's, you know, with the father. And he said, I'm going to give you an African name. And the African name he wanted to give me is like, what? So it was like, It was Tamua, and I didn't care too much for it. So I talked to this a girlfriend of mine, and she was telling me, she said, "Look your name up." I looked my name up, and then I saw what Lenora means, and Lenora means walk in the light of God. It means light. And I said, I'm taking that back, and it's like when I went to Booker T. There was one sister, I never knew her name, but I saw her, and she lived on up the street on Dreamville Avenue, and she was standing in her doorway, McCullough Street. And I said, "How you doing?" I said, "We went to school together." She said, "Yeah." I said, "What's your name?" She said, "Lenora." I said, "You kidding?" Your name, Lenore. I say my name, Lenore, too. So still to this day, we see each other. But it's just that as far as some things that we want to do, and we have so many things that would distract us or, you know, make us not think that we were worthy of doing that, then that's something that really needs to be taught in the schools, in the churches, even just amongst family coming together, that you can do things that you see other people doing who are not our color. Because right now in our community, it's all Koreans and, you know, Hispanic people in the stores that were once upon a time all owned by mother. They were mom and pop stores by black people. So it's a whole thing that we need to, you know, reach back like the bird that looks back. What is that called? I'm having a senior moment. Oh my gosh.
But I understand exactly what you're saying. And the beautiful part about it is always like yourself and myself, when I was teaching the adults that were working laborers, and then when the computers came out, they had been on these jobs for 20 years. And we're talking thousands of people who knew nothing about a computer. Then everything became computerized. Okay. I went to college and got the degree and everything to teach them. So it looks like we have to teach our own in order to lift
Sankofa.
Our people up, you know.
Sankofa.
We
that's
have
the name
to do that.
Yes, we do. Yep.
Okay, steal it away. We ain't got long to stay here. Can you recite that for us?
Yes. Slave master put 12,000 on her head. She's one black woman they wish was dead. Harriet Tubman was her name. Freeing the people was her aim. Feeding the hungry, clothing the naked. The babies and the elderly cared for and protected. Never lost a passenger, not one slave. The price for freedom got to steal away. Steal away, steal away. We ain't got long to stay here. Up, down, day and night. Sometimes the only light we had was the blessed moonlight. Never lost a passenger, not one slave. The price for freedom. We got to steal away. The Moses was her name. She freed many folk, and it wasn't no joke. There's enough room for freedom. Harriet Tubman was there to lead her. Harriet Tubman was there to lead her. Get on board, little children. Get on board, my brothers and sisters. Get on board, little children. There's plenty of room for freedom.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Now, when did you write that?
Well, this was written back in, actually it was in the 90s when I had gotten the information from Jim McGowan about the realization of, Sarah Braffett wanted to say, when Harriet Tubman was interviewed by her, and this is what he told me. In fact, I have a copy of the Harriet Tubman Journal, and this is like the truth from the interview that Sarah Braffett had did with Harriet Tubman. She was in a hurry because her father was, he owned a publishing company, and they were going to go on vacation to Europe, so she had to hurry up and rush and do it. So when she asked Harriet Tubman how much of a reward was put on her head, and she said, I reckon it was $12,000. That is how much. And Sarah Braffett said, no, it was more than that. I'm going to put $3,500 on your head. So that is one of the things that Brother Jim McGowan had told me. And then there's, you know, other things that he has said, because, yes, she did. She freed the people, and that was her aim. And just like in the Bible, it says, feed the hungry, clothe the naked. The babies and the elderly, you must care for them and protect them. So Harriet Tubman did that. Back in the 80s, more so the 90s, I had portrayed Harriet Tubman. I have pictures that a professional photographer had taken pictures of me, and they were in black and white. And I have a picture of me dressed up like Harriet Tubman, and I have a rifle in my hand. And the rifle is a play rifle, y'all. The rifle I got from the thrift shop, it was a thrift shop on Belvedere Avenue, and I talked to the brother who ran it and told him what I wanted to know if I could, you know, get some of the items I needed. So he told me, get what you want. And it was Shaw's. I had even had a bonnet, and I think I still have it in my basement because I have moved since Queensbury. I had moved twice and still haven't gone into some of those. But I had, like, Shaw's. I had bandanas. And, you know, it was just a thing that I had, the things that I needed to have, aprons. So when I had portrayed Hurry Up, Come and Rise Again, We Ain't Got Long to Stay Here, the people who were my friends, I wound up making a video, and I went in the studio, and I had dramatized Robert Hayden's poem, Renegade, Renegade. And I have sound effects. I have the sound of the chains, the shackles, the dogs barking, the waterfall. I have the paddy rollers, which really the paddy rollers are the police. Now they are called police, but the paddy rollers were chasing the slaves and the dogs, and also the waterfall, and the parts that I have, they all fit in the parts of that particular poem of Robert Hayden, because it starts off, actually when I did the video, I started off in Africa, and I'm playing the drum and singing Funga. No, I'm not singing
right.
The sound of Funga. Mm. And then the sound changes to, the African rhythm changes to a plantation sound. And it's like a sound that my son did this sound, and I used it. And the sound that changed from Funga, like bop, 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 bop. And my son coming with this sound, which is the plantation sound, and it's bop, bop, ba-da-da, bop, bop. Bop, bop, ba-da-da, bop, bop. And there's a sister named V.B. Fatima. I took her in the studio with me, and another sister named Darlene Millens-Bay. And V.B. Fatima, she screamed during that part. And this is the part where you hear the dogs bark and you hear the waterfall.
Right.
And, yes. And then the poem, the Robert Hayden poem. And then it just dramatized everything, because when it said... In a particular part of the poem, some go weeping, some go rejoicing, some in silk, and some in shackles, and you will hear the sound of the shackles. And then it's Bibi Fatima, I had her say a part, and when you hear the shackles, this is when the slaves were running away, some were caught and some ran away, and it says, rise and go and fare you well. And then it goes into the song, No More Oxen Black for Me. So that particular poem was a poem that I was introduced to by a sister named Natalie Carter. And her and I, we still are very good friends, but she's living in, I believe it's New York, but she has been doing a lot of Broadway, playing Ma Rainey, and, you know, she has made a big name for herself. And
great.
She has... shared that poem with me back in the 80s. And from that time, she had done the poem, but the time that she had came to see me, she had that poem, and that was the first time I ever seen that poem by Robert Hayden. And I appreciate her introducing me to that poem. But I, when she came, it was more like she asked me, how would I say this part? How would you say that part? This is a slave master part. And so I'm sure, you know, everything was combined. And being that I'm still born strong in the culture community, I feel that we have to teach and share. So we would teach by talking about Harriet Tubman and share that we can do a production. We can dramatize this whole thing.
We got the part that says, some go weeping, some go rejoicing. And I had done it at the Arena Players, and it was just me and my brother. And my brother played the drums, and he stayed in the back of the Arena Players auditorium. And I was up on stage, but I didn't come out up on stage before because there was him drumming. And then when he changed the rhythm, of course he was playing the Harriet Tubman, the Funga rhythm. And then the changed rhythm came about, and that's when I came out and saying, if you see my pompy 30 years of age, plain stock is Negro shoe. If you see my Anna like the young mulatto, with E on branded on the right cheek, R on the left, catch her if you can and notify subscriber. Catch her if you can and it won't be easy, easy, easy. And I had, it was at an AXO program that was given by the NAACP, and there was some children, some youth that were there who were getting awards. And two of them became the ones who ran when I said the runs to fall. So it was very dramatic. And that was the first time. And the Arena Players, they used the smoke machine. So when I came from the back and I appeared, it was Harriet Tubman. And that's when, you know, everything came from that. So, like I said, there's just so many things that's coming to me, and I'm seeing more of a purpose. And more of my purpose here in the culture community in Baltimore.
Right. Well, at the Griot, I can understand that. Like I said, I've seen some of the actual programs.
Mm-hmm.
You have just mentioned quite a few of your notable travels and unforgettable experiences. Is there anything that you want to tell us in this professional continuation of African oral tradition? Any rewards or media performance or achievements that you'd like to share with us?
Oh, yes.
Or any travels or things like that.
Yes. Well, one that really, really touched my heart is that when we went to the Eastern Shore on Harriet Tubman Day, and that was in 1995, I carried some members of the Park Rock Drummers. I had a sister who was a very, very famous, and oh, my goodness, she is a sculptor. Her name is Salah Jenkins. And the sister, she's doing a lot of things that is more spiritual than anything that I've ever seen before. And she does faces. So she's also on Facebook, and you can see her works. And she's also down at the Reginald Lewis Museum. And she's the artist in residence. So she does all the arts and crafts and things of that nature. But her and I was in a group back in the day, and it was called Poetry in Motion. And we all backed up each other. And it was one poem that she did called Mama, dedicated to her mama. And she would start off, she would say, Mama, excuse me, Mama, if you can hear my voice, you know? So
yes,
that poem is powerful. So we talked about it. We're going to unite again. And the mayor's arts and culture organization every year from 1992, because 1991 I applied, but I didn't have the paper for support. And when they told me what I needed, I had done it, and it was like they would reward you with monies to use for your project. So within the time, the 8 years that I lived on Queensbury, that's when I was using it. And Kurt Smoke was the mayor the first time. And it was through the community organization that they let you know about the different programs you can apply for.
Right.
And that's not happening right now. We have so much talent. I could see the children. They come out there and they dance on their porch. They're singing. And
right.
It ain't like it used to be. I mean, we need to come and do the things and talk about the things that work. Because, all right, I'm going to jump back to when I started the youth program on Queensbury. There was a young man, and I had told them about Marcus Garvey. And he was one, I said, do you rap? He said, yeah. So he was doing some of the rap that we was doing out there, and you know that kind of rap that was happening. And I told him about Marcus Garvey, and I told him, I said, you think you can write a poem about that? So he said, yeah. And he called me up and came down, and, you know, I told him to come down to my house and let me hear it. So this particular poem he did, the rap he did, he said, I know my ABC. I count to 1, 2, 3. I come to tell you all about my black history. Marcus Garvey said, up your mighty race, accomplish what you will, African people get ready to build. And so that right there, it was like the other children had came in with it, because when he said, up your mighty race, you know, so they would say that. And so I ran into his mother. He's doing rapping, but it's not the cultural thing. And he's like around my son's age, you know, like in their late 20s. So those are the things we need to do. That's how we have to teach through our history. Yeah.
Now, what I'm going to do is take another break. I mean, I knew you would be able to really talk all the way through the entire hour.
Yeah, I'm sorry about
that. So let me take
something from somebody out there. Some
okay, I'll take a break, and we will be back with Sister Inora. We'll be right back in 15 seconds. Thank you. Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking with Sister Inora. She's a griot, and we've been discussing all the many things that that particular organization is doing for the African-American community under Poetry, Prose, Pride through Language. Again, this is my name is Andale Banks. I'm your host, A Wish Upon a Star. We appreciate you listening to us, and we're broadcasting from BBS Radio. Station 2. Now you can hear us, of course, on your mobile, 716-748-0144, our website, also on Facebook, Craigslist, and iTunes. Again, this is Wish Upon a Star, www.bbsradio.com, Station 2, and I'm your host, Andale Banks. Today we're speaking to Sister Inora Griot of African American heritage. And Sister Inora, now, there is a mantra that says that everyone has a story in them, just hiring to come out. You have told us about your rich history and working with our youth to introduce them to their culture. What advice would you give one who might want to share their experience in the written world?
Well, I would have to say, if you have a topic that you want to express yourself in, it can be dance, it can be poetry, or, you know, there's another form of art called spoken word, and do something that's going to have you be a part of an art form. And the art form could be poetry, it could be song, it could be dance, it could be play of instrument. And this is how I have my grandchildren. I have three grandchildren and one great grand. And my granddaughter, the first one, she's 10, and she had been at the libraries when we performed, and she knows how to play fongo, and she knows how to play other rhythms. In fact, at Morgan State, she and my other two grandchildren, the twins, they had been a part of the celebration, the Kwanzaa celebration, this for citywide children and the youth program through Morgan State University. Morgan State University. And they were on the flyers of the year before last and last year. They were on the front of the flyers, and they were on stage. And Sanaya is her name. She's playing the kungo drum. And she's standing next to my brother and Jamira. She's playing a gore with a stick. So they all have rhythms that I teach them. And when they come here, a lot of times we have a lot of fun between listening to reggae music. And then, you know, we like just play rhythms. I have like keyboard. They just look for them drums that I have, because sometimes I got to put them up. But, you know, this is a thing that you do. You teach them, and as you teach them, this generation, then there are other generations to come. And this is how even my oldest daughter, you know, she was involved with the with the theater, being in, you know, the plays. When we did the history of the black man, what we did, we started off with the Indians and how the white man come and poisoned the Indians with the liquor and gave them blankets with smallpox and all kinds of diseases and killed them and scalped them and used their hair, you know, I mean, all of the negative things that they did in fooling the Indians who were what they called American, the American. And then after we, you know, Brother Charlie, he played the white man. And from the Indian scene, we went into the African scene. And that's when my daughter was also, you know, like one of the children, you know, we playing funga and dancing. And then some of us had beads, because at the time I was making jewelry. And, you know, like the women, you know, we would be like right there on the ground and we up there doing that. And then all of a sudden, here come the white man coming and saying, what are y'all, you know, he uses the N-word. And he said, oh, I mean y'all darkies, what are y'all doing? And so we didn't think of him being as wicked as he was. And he fooled us just like he fooled the Indians, but took us to a foreign land.
Right. I know the history is most important. I appreciate all that you have said. But before we go off the air, Sister Inora, could you recite a part of your Harriet Tubman story for us, please?
Okay, this is the Robert Hayden poem. And I know it's too long, but I'm going to do what I can do.
Okay, you have about a minute or two.
Okay.
2 minutes. 2 minutes will be fine.
All right. The run, the fall, the rises and stumblings on from darkness into darkness. And as the darkness thickens and shapes of terror, and the hounds pursuing in the night cold and the night long and the rivers to cross, and the jack-o'-lantern, and blackness ahead, and when shall we reach that sometime morning, and keep on going and never turn back, and keep on going and never turn back, and keep on going. Many thousands rise and go. Many thousands course it over. O mythic north, O star yonder Bible city, some go weeping, some go rejoicing, some in shackles, some in silk, and some in shackles, some in silk, and some in shackles. Rise and go ye well, no more auction block for me, no more drivers less for me. If you see my pompy, 30 years of age, plain stockings, Negro shoes. If you see my Anna like the young mulatto, with E. Brandon on the right, seat, arm on the left, catch if you can and notify subscriber. Catch if you can and it won't be easy. Because they're dark underground when you try to catch them. Plunge into quicksand, whirlpools, mazes, turn into scorpions when you try to catch them. And before I be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free. Harriet Tubman, wanted, dead or alive, alias the General, alias the Moses, stealer of slaves, in league with Garrison, Elcott, Thurl, John Brown, Frederick Douglass, armed and known to be dangerous, wanted reward, dead or alive. Tell me, Ezekiel, tell me, do you see male Jehovah coming to deliver me? Come a ride on my train. Come a ride on my train, that ghost story train, moving. First stop, have mercy. And the last stop, hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. Come a ride on my train, mean to be free. Asante.
Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. We're going to say thank you again, Sister Inora. We appreciate all that you have done in being on the show. Thank you so much, and I will be talking to you later. We're going to take a 2 to 5 second break, and then we'll sign off.
Good day to you, Sister Eleanor. Again, our greatest thanks from Wish Upon a Star.
It's Monday morning, getting back on my grind. What a weekend. Funny how time can fly.
This is Andell Banks, your host of Wish Upon a Star, saying thank you so much for listening to our broadcast. And we're broadcasting on www.bbsradio.com, Station 2. You can listen to all of the previous broadcasts on the website in the archive link. You can also hear us and listen to the program on iTunes, Facebook, Craigslist, and certainly on your particular digital device. We welcome comments and suggestions. If you have any comments and suggestions, please email them to musicradio34@gmail.com. That's again, comments and suggestions at musicradio34@gmail.com. This is your host, Andell, and our coordinator, Denise Banks, saying always keep reaching for the stars. Michelle Obama, I will leave you with her saying, this is the last year they will be in the White House, and we have enjoyed them. And she says, success isn't about how much money you make. It's about the difference you make in people's lives. Michelle Obama, thank you and God bless.